ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Kirtim Sharanadharam Vana Gayan Madhyan Idam Tantriya Ramayatya Aturam Jagat Aho Devarshir Dhanyoyam Yat Kirtim Shandaranvana Dayan Madhyan Nidam Tantriya Ramayat Yaturam Jagat Aho All glory to Devarshi, the sage of the gods. Tanya, all success. Ayam Yat, one who. Kirtim, glorious. Shangadanvana, of the personality of Godhead. Gayan, singing. Madhyan, taking pleasure in. Idam, this. Tantriya, by means of the instrument. Ramayati, enlightenment. Aturam, distress. Jagata, world. All glory and success to Srila Narad Muni, because he glorifies the activities of the personality of Godhead. And so doing, he himself takes pleasure and also enlivens all the distressed souls of the universe. Purport. Sri Narad Muni plays on his instrument to glorify the transcendental activities of the Lord and to give relief to all miserable living entities of the universe. No one is happy here within the universe, and what is felt as happiness is Maya's illusion. The illusory energy of the Lord is so strong that even the hog who lives in filthy stool feels happy. No one can be truly happy within the material world. Srila Narad Muni, in order to enlighten the miserable inhabitants, wanders everywhere. His mission is to get them back home, back to Godhead. That is the mission of all genuine devotees of the Lord, following the footsteps of that great sage. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Conversation Between Narada and Vyasamaya. So here has been made the point that those who are true servants of the Lord here, true devotees, then they are preaching. They are trying to preach, and they are trying to get everyone to understand the message of the Lord. So that is their actual purpose. So this is Narad Muni's point to Vyasadeva, is that as a pure soul, as a devotee, then this point hasn't been brought out in his writings. As Vyasadeva, his duty is to compile the Vedic literature to just to make it easier for people to understand. And because he hasn't presented it so they can understand properly what's the essence, then it's not representative of what he should be doing as a devotee. This is the problem that's being pointed out. So Narad Muni then is then trying to bring him to the point that it's by glorification of the Lord that is what is the ideal. And Narad Muni at all times, all places, and all ages, that's what he does. because the glorification of the Holy Name is still the root of all the other processes. Right? Means from the name you'll get meditation. Right? That chanting of the Holy Name, that itself is yajna. Right? And by chanting the name, that is worship. Does that make sense? But meditation doesn't necessarily, it means it technically does, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're chanting or that you're actually worshiping the Lord. Like the Patanjali Yogi, he meditates on Lord Vishnu, but not from the standpoint that he's going to worship him. Only from the standpoint is he's the Supreme. So he's to be, of all things to meditate on, you meditate on the best. But it's not that he worships that person or surrenders to that person. So we see is that meditation is complete because of the chanting. Yajna is complete because of the chanting. And deity worship is complete because of the chanting. When that chanting is there, everything becomes complete, everything becomes perfect. So Narad Muni is making this point, is that if you want to benefit everybody, then you have to point out that the real benefit is hearing and chanting and remembering about the Lord. That's the most important thing. If that's there, everything else will follow. If that's not there, then it will be nice, it will be good, pious, great, pleasant, but still not fully correct. Because the living entity can never be happy in the material world. That's the difficulty. Because even when one performs every duty perfectly, one gets a perfect material result, one will not be satisfied. Or one detaches oneself from the material energy, one will not be satisfied. One has to attach oneself to the Lord. Without that, then these other aspects are not good enough. It's just not enough. So the material world is the cause of misery, but getting rid of misery is not happiness. Right? We are conditioned to that. That's what we think is happiness. So we see on the temporary, okay, we got rid of this distress in this particular point, and we became happy. So, and then this other thing came up, so we'll get rid of that, and then we'll become happy. So there's always the hope that if you just keep getting rid of the problems that come up, that happiness will be attained. Right? And we'll just find that situation which there isn't any distress. But even if that was possible, right? Which is not. But even if it was, still the soul is not satisfied just by the definition that happiness means getting rid of the problem. Right? Happiness should be something positive, something interactive, where you're interacting with persons on the eternal transcendental platform. That will actually be happiness. This is something positive. Just getting rid of the negative is not good enough. But that's anything in this material world that you call pleasure is only removing the pain. Right? We have a goal. That goal is there's a pain for fulfilling a desire. As that desire is being fulfilled, we call that happiness. And when it's completely done, then we're elated. And then the focus goes on to something else because we have to always be happy. So to always be happy means we always have to be removing pain. So to be removing pain, that means there has to be pain in the first place. Right? So that means material existence, then we can never be happy because the definition of happiness is removal of pain. It means there must be pain to compare it to. Right? Otherwise, if it's just ordinary or standard, we'll just call it, it'll be boring. Right? That's the thing. So it's the excitement of removing the pain and having attained it that we call happiness. But as soon as that's there, we remove that pain, then it becomes normal, becomes ordinary. There's no happiness. Right? Like you're very, very hungry. You sit down to eat. While you're eating and the hunger is starting to get less and less, right, you're feeling great happiness. But as soon as you're completely stuffed, you're not happy anymore. In fact, when the next distress comes, how to digest what you just ate. right? So you take your nap, you drink your drinks, you take your medicines, you go for your walks, you do whatever it is, and then as that pain in the stomach, the weight starts to get less and less, then we're happy. But as soon as it goes completely away, then the next anxiety comes, hunger, right? So that's the material world. It's just the way it works. And if you think about it, anything you call happiness is simply removing pain. Nothing is excluded from this. Right? So that's the difficulty. The material world means pain. And happiness means trying to remove that. So Prabhupada makes the point is no one can be satisfied within the material world. Even if you remove all the pain, you still can't, because by definition, that's the way it is. The way it functions. It's spiritual by remembering the Lord, glorifying the Lord, that we can actually be happy. Right? That is actual satisfaction. So even though there are different emotions tasted, but on the material platform we might even call it happiness, still, because of its fullness and its intensity and its connection with the Lord, and the Lord being pleased. We are satisfied. From that, we are satisfied to be in that situation. Right? Though, because of its nectar, it eternally gets better and better. So there's, on that platform, then the eternal not happy. I mean, not satisfied, because one can taste it more and more. But it just gets better and better. It's not like the material world, where it gets less and less. So this is the conclusion of Narada Muni's instructions, is that Vyasadeva should make it very clear that glorification of the Lord is the point. So we see then, this is how the Bhagavatam opens. Right? First he opens with glorification of the Lord, invocation. Then after this, then he sets the scene, and then they ask, what happened when Krishna leaves? Right? Then the process of devotional service, the Supreme Lord, his qualities are explained. And after explaining that, then we have this story. So it's made very obvious that the glorification of the Lord is the essence. So what has not been made obvious in the Mahabharata, then is made obvious in the opening of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then the rest of Bhagavatam should be viewed from that point, is that it's glorification of the Lord that is actually what we're looking for. So the rest of it should all be seen in connection with the Lord, in glorification. So that means his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, and these pastimes then are pastimes of the material world, of the creation, the maintenance, and dissolution, and his eternal pastimes. So all that comes into that heading. Therefore, then, all the different aspects of the Bhagavatam are relishable, and they can be tasted, no matter, what one's position. So even the very elevated, then they find pleasure in seeing how Krishna works, his cleverness, how he deals with the material energy, how he deals with everything, how he injects his pastimes into it, how everything then actually is revolving around that. So it becomes very nice. They can appreciate the mood. Any questions or comments? Indirect. So the question is, this year it's being pointed out that the direct process is the most important. So how do we understand how to use the indirect, that it will be efficient? The idea is that we're trying to get the direct to be the constant. The 24 hours that all we're doing is hearing, chanting, and remembering about the Lord. So that is the process, that's the perfection. So the indirect has to be to get us to that point. means the direct, you're doing it, you're already at that point. But the problem is where our mind, because of material conditioning, is distracted. And because of this distraction, it gets into other alternative thoughts and activities, other names, other forms, other qualities, other pastimes. So then the indirect process is used to take those items that are distracting us and connecting them to the Lord. And by their connection to the Lord, then they bring the consciousness back around again to the Lord. If we actually make that connection, then we both get liberated and it becomes part of our, and becomes devotional service. If we simply connect it to the scriptures but don't actually connect it to the Lord, then it's pious activities that will get us facility or liberate us from the material energy. It means if we're attached to the fruits, it will give us pious results. If we're not attached to the fruits, it will give us liberation. So that's the reason that the emphasis is always put on the hearing and chanting, and these secondary processes, if they're not seen in connection with the primary, then for us as devotees, they're not so important. But unless we are on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, we will be distracted by material energy. So that means unless we are engaging that material energy in the Lord's service through the indirect processes, then what is the hope? So that's the point, is this indirect processes are useful to bring us to the primary process for where we're distracted. But they themselves, if they're not connected to the Lord, there's too much attachment, they themselves will be a distraction. Does that make sense? So it's just like, let's say someone has a distraction on accumulating wealth. You know, that just they have a very good brain for generating, you know, economic development. So they're distracted from thinking about Krishna by that. Now if they use that to create economic development that will be used in Krishna's service, then they Krishnize this propensity. And this will then bring them towards Krishna. Means that if they're doing it for Krishna, the devotion will develop. Now if they're doing it for their own purposes and to please Krishna, then they will get material result which they will try to enjoy, and that itself will be a distraction. Then you have to take the enjoyment and now connect that to the Lord. Right? Means by performing their occupational duty, they'll get artha. From artha, they'll get kama. So then the kama has to be connected to the Lord. And if it is, then also it will be progressive. If it's not, then they'll get stuck and get distracted. Now if they can do both of those with detachment, right, means that their economics is then not for them but for Krishna's service. You know, but taking care of themselves, family, their other things are part of that service. Then it won't be a distraction. And if the facilities that is necessary to manage their life then are also connected to Krishna, then it also will free them from the material energy. Right? It means their eating then is offered to Krishna, their activities is being done for Krishna, all these things are connected. It will liberate them. But it's only the portion that is done to please Krishna that will give bhakti. The other will simply give karma jnana. Right? If it's not connected to Krishna. If it's connected to Krishna, then it will go. So if you have doing it for Krishna, but it's sakam for your own purposes, then you get both happening at once. You'll be getting material facility and you'll be progressing devotionally. But the progress devotionally will be slow to that degree that the progress materially is sought after. So the more that is closed, seeking the facility, then the greater will be the progress in the devotion. Right? And if there's no attachment to the fruits, then the devotional side will go quickly. So then the liberation will go very fast. You'll be free from material energy. And so in that way you'll be happy. And you'll be progressing towards transcendence, which will be actual satisfaction. So So that's how it's used, but one has to know the science to use it. Otherwise, then it's easy to get distracted. In the beginning, you're dealing with something, you're detached from it, because we're so dependent on the result, we may then become distracted by that result. You know, we get results, we get some facility from that, or some sense gratification from that, we may get distracted by that. You know, so we always have to be on our guard to see that we're not distracted. Engage the propensities in Krishna's service without getting distracted by the fruit. Right? Does that make sense? The question then is that performance, let us say you're performing devotional activities with attachment, but at the same time you're trying to please Krishna. So which will be more powerful? Which will get you the result? So both will be functioning, but because it's being done for Krishna, then Krishna will start to many times put obstacles in the path of our enjoyment. And so because of frustration, naturally the result is frustration, is anything that we consider is giving us trouble, we try to distance ourselves from. So then if one item is giving us trouble, we'll distance ourselves from it because of the frustration. If our realization is enough, we understand that frustration is generic. It's not specific. So it wasn't the specific activity or item that was the problem. It's the generic of the category. You know, like it wasn't that, okay, it wasn't how I spent the wealth here or there, it's wealth itself or position itself. It wasn't, okay, this position was troubled, but that position will be fine. It's the whatever it is in the material world, the dhanjan, sundari, all these different aspects that are there, anything that we're trying to enjoy in this material world. Then, when we come to understand it's just the material world, that's then when we're freed from it. So, by the process of bhakti, if we stick to the bhakti, then that realization will come. Because the bhakti is more powerful. But that still is based on desire. We have to desire to keep at the devotional service. Then, even though both are functioning, the material and the spiritual will be successful because it's real. But we have to maintain the desire. If we drop that desire, we get tired, then we will see that the weeds will spring up. And then the other will become dormant. But as long as we keep at it, then the devotion will always, because from devotion comes jnana and vairagya, comes detachment and knowledge. So then with time we'll actually understand the situation, who we are, what's the situation, the engagement with the Lord. And we will start to become slowly detached from that item of attachment. But we have to be steady, and it means always constantly trying to make it work. Right? It means we may be more or less successful, but that determination is there, and then Krishna will help. The example being of the sparrow. It decided to enter the ocean. Impossible. Right? But because of the determination, then you please the higher authorities because you're doing it to please Krishna. Therefore, then they will help and the impossible becomes possible. Does that make sense? So that desire always must, it's not just automatic. It is automatic if you keep at it. But it's not automatic that you will keep at it. Because that's the nature of jiva. Jiva does not automatically serve the Lord. The jiva, because being tossed, the tasta has to make the conscious decision to serve the Lord. Right? Once they develop that habit, then basically it's automatic, because then they're in the fire of emotional service. So then they're as good as the internal potency, which automatically serves the Lord. But the jiva doesn't. So that's where the weakness and strength of the like automatic is you get those who are lax, and they say, oh, it's automatic. We don't care for all these rules. We don't care for all this philosophy. It's automatic. Then they may get distracted, and they won't know it. You know, it's just like, let's say, they're doing the management. They're decided, okay, for preaching, we're going to do this particular project. And they're going forward. They're doing that project. The project is developing. It's happening. Money's coming in. Things are visible. You can see it. But at the same time, is devotees' enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness is waning. They're going away from the temple, and that manager suddenly said, oh, they're not sincere, they don't have a vision. So the point is he's engaged his material ability to manage in Krishna's service, but he's become so distracted by it that he's not actually seeing that the devotees are also part of Krishna's plan. So even though you could say he's doing devotional service, the point's been this, like Vyasadeva Mahabharata. He's saying it's being done for Krishna, but what's the proof? Okay, you have a building. Well, how does that prove devotion? Right? Unless that building is going to do something for Krishna. Right? It's going to enlighten the devotees to start to somehow or another. Right? So that is the point, is that it has to balance. It's just like, let's say you have a nice facility and you have a big festival with all kinds of, you know, organization and all that. That can be very nice, and devotees are very enlightened. At the same time, as sometimes you see devotees are very enlightened by some very simple, more intimate environment with no facilities. So it's more the atmosphere that's created than the facilities. Right, so if the facilities enhance, that's great. Then you can take it bigger. Right? Because the other one is only done on an intimate level. Right? You know, only so many people can fit in a room and sit and laugh and talk and eat chai together. You can't do that with 1,000 people. But with 1,000 people, you have a nice arrangement, a nice prasad, and then everybody's talking with somebody and they all feel that, even though they don't feel it with everybody, but there's still a mood of 1,000 people taking prasad. It's a power. So as long as that's there, but if the point is it's just, okay, we fed 1,000s of people, but those 1,000s of people are not impressed with the prasad service, with the menu, with the cooking, with the facilities, then, okay, we fed 1,000 people, so what? Nobody was pleased. So of what credit, what did you do for Krishna? So there's always these two sides to the same item. So depending upon the situation, you push one or the other. If the people are working very hard and it doesn't work out, then the point is it's the sincerity, it's the endeavor, it's all that. If the thing has worked out perfectly and everything and that, but no one's satisfied, then it's like it's the mood that counts. You know, you've done everything perfectly, so what? So that's why that's the point, is because Krishna is both. You know. So this is a difficulty that comes up, is sometimes even devotees become so bewildered by it that they lose faith in the scriptures or lose faith in Prabhupada's teachings. Because you can take the same point and argue it two ways. Lord Chaitanya would go down to the Ganga, you know, after school. And he would go there and find all the big pandas, and he would sit there and start arguing with them and presenting Mayavada philosophy and defeat them all. Then, after doing that, and they're all bewildered, then he would turn around and then defeat that Mayavada philosophy. Right? So the same verses, same points can be used either way. Because you have tattva, you have rasa. So that means the same situation has both. And they may seem to be opposed. Krishna's rasa dance, by tattva, on one sense, you could say, you could look at it this way, that it's wrong. Right? He's breaking rules, he's doing all these different things. But by rasa, it's the highest exchange between him and the devotees. Right? Complete opposites. Now let's take that same example and switch it around, exact opposite. by Tattva, he is the Supreme Lord and there is energy, so his interacting with them is perfect swati rasa. But if you look at it from the point of rasa and culture, then here it is, here he, this is adultery. So we've taken one example and shown two extremes of it, and then taken the two extremes and switched them around and given the opposite also. So that's the point, is that's why it's easy to become bewildered. Without the acharyas, without the amnaya tattva coming down from the acharyas, one will never figure out the scriptures. Because how you'll figure out God? God is everything. How you'll figure him out? Because everything that's contradictory is God. So there's no way you can figure it out. So only by the direction of the acharyas, then can you figure it out. That's why we stick to that, then we know what is the root. Like that. So we see Prabhupada would also talk the same thing. Is he'll, means he'll see constantly, he'll talk about Varnashram. Means if it's like this, is it talking about directly remembering and serving the Lord? But there are times when it's talking about the process, and in the process, then secondary aspects will be used. So the secondary aspects being used means they fit within this framework of Varnashram. The Prabhupada just made the point, human life begins with Varnashram. If you're not following Varnashram, you're not human. Right? And devotional service is so wonderful and powerful, you don't have to be human to execute it. You know what I'm saying? The dog is chanting Hare Krishna and going back to Godhead, right? Hanuman is a monkey. Like that. His friends are monkeys and bears, you know. And, you know, they don't follow all the Varnashram. Right? When they were talking Varnashram, Bali Maharaj Bali, he was complaining that Ramachandra wasn't following Varnashram. And as long as he gave any rule concerning Varnashram, Bali rejected it. But as soon as he said, hey, you're an animal. Kings go into forests without challenge and shoot animals. What's your problem? He accepted that. Right? Because then it was, you know, they put it in that perspective. You're looking at it that way? Okay. But if it's like, you know, looking at it from righteousness and this and that, then you're wrong. From every angle. But if you're looking at it, you're just hunting and I'm an animal, okay. You know, so then that's the point, is that it always starts that. And human life is meant for God realization. Human life begins with inquiry. But if you're going to get distracted by Varnashram and get into all this Dharma Artha Kama Moksha, and it's not connected to the Lord, then what's the difference between our mistake and Vyasadeva's mistake? It's the same point. You know, the difference maybe is Vyasadeva's more expert. You know, like that. He's done everything perfectly, or we're not. So then that would be considered. So as long as devotional service is there and we stick to that, then gradually that knowledge and understanding will come by which we can change our desire, and the attachment will come that will make it easier. But we still have to have that desire. Without the desire, it doesn't happen. Krishna fulfills our desires. So when we desire to come to him, then the opportunities come up. If we maintain that within that framework of what comes up, then it will progress and will be successful. So that's the automatic. But just to sit back and just say it automatically happens, even though we're not connecting it to Krishna, and then we're becoming distracted so much by it, then we might find that devotional service becomes less and less. And this other thing becomes more and more prominent. And so it's not an uncommon thing. Like that. Because as soon as you get involved with Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, immediately there's distraction. Right? Because there is a need, and that need you try to fulfill, and by fulfilling it, you become happy. And the soul needs to be happy. So if we're either finding happiness in the transcendental, right? Or we're finding our happiness in the mundane. That the soul can't function without happiness. Does that make sense? Does the soul get any happiness? Soul gets happiness, but compared to what is there, we don't call it happiness. Like, let's say you go out and do, the person goes out, works hard, goes out 8 hours, and after 8 hours, they've, you know, made $30 million. Right? You'll say that was worth. They've gone out for 8 hours, you know, worked hard, you know, sweating, using all their intelligence, and they come back with 2 rubies. You'll say that's not work. Right? They got a result. So the same way is for the soul of what is real happiness. Therefore, even though there is happiness that you gain by interacting with the material world, it's not happiness. Because it's illusory. We only project onto it that it is happiness. We've decided if this situation arises, I will be happy. Because it's not the situation. Another person is in the same situation. They're suffering. Like that. So that's the point. It's like the beggar is on the side of the road. He thinks, if I can just, you know, get something to eat from this roadside hotel, I'll be happy. Right? So let's say you have, you know, a wealthy person or a cultured person that always just eats, you know, home cooking. But for some reason they end up stranded somewhere and he has to eat in that hotel. He's unhappy. But the situation is the same. They both are eating the same thing from the same hotel. One is in ecstasy and one is weird. So it's only we project that onto something material, and the fulfillment of our needs through that situation, that's called happiness. Like that. Or distress. Anyway. So that's the point, is that we use the material energy as the medium for our happiness, our so-called happiness. But it's arbitrary. That's the thing. Each individual makes it a point of what's happiness. Like, we sat down now and gave out pencil and paper, asked everyone to write down what actually makes them happy. It means that they've experienced actual happiness from anything in their whole life. And write it down, and see there'll be some points will be common, and a lot of points will be very unique. You know, so that's the point. It's not the same. You know, because it's arbitrary. Each individual, by their conditioning, projects onto material energy that if I fulfill this need through this situation or activity, I will be happy. But it's not the endeavor. It's not the gaining of it. It's just that we've decided that I'll be happy if this happens. And if it happens, then we're happy. You know, if someone else, you know, okay, nice. You know, like you always have to think, you know, it's like you build the building, you know, the engineer is in ecstasy when he sees the foundations going in and the rods going in and all that. But when you're plastering the outside and putting the final touches in paint, it means nothing to him. Right? And to the architect, the engineer is just a problem he has to overcome. So he's overcome it, he's happy. But him, it's nice. So then the two are looking at the building, right? And the engineer is thinking, nobody gets to see the foundations. Nobody gets to see the 20 mm rods that are in the columns here, you know? And the architect is thinking, by God's grace, no one sees the foundation and no one sees those rods. Right? You know, so that's the point. They're both seeing the same thing and having completely different viewpoints. You know, the engineer is thinking, if we just put this manhole cover right here in the center of the temple, the engineering would be perfect. Right? Because according to the book, every 35 feet you gotta have the manhole cover. And so we'll put it right here, right in the middle. We'll put it right here, you know. We'll put it this black square, and we'll put it right there. It'll look really nice in the middle of the black square. And the architect is freaking out, pulling his hair out, you know. So that's the same situation. For one person is ecstasy, the other is a nightmare. So that's the material energy.
So it seems like it's a happiness, but because it's temporary and because it's only actually removing pain, it's not actual happiness. So not only is it not actual, it's illusory, and it's not actual because it's not positive. So on both ways, doubly, it's not. So that's why as long as we're conditioned, then what we do think makes us happy, we should engage in the Lord's service. So then it progresses us, and then we will lose the taste for those so-called happiness. Does that make sense? How do we make a difference between Krishna's mercy, free will, and karma? You're worried about the suffering. Oh, if there's suffering, is it due to free will? Is it due to karma? Is it due to Krishna's mercy? Okay. I mean, this is a side point. Is why are we only worried only about the suffering? Why are we not worried about the happiness? Because when happiness comes, we completely forget about Krishna. Right? So it's just disdain for us, if not more. Right? Because the suffering, if you're with some training and some, you know, philosophic tendencies, turn to higher authority, take shelter. Like that. But the happiness that we have a tendency to forget. Right? So one will always notice in the discussion on this karma and free will, it's only in consideration of our controlling and enjoying, in that I'm out of control and I'm suffering. Where is my control? I'm suffering. It's supposed to be I'm in control and I'm happy. No one talks about karma. Right? Someone comes to you, you know, after the class you go out, someone invites you over for some shot, you know, on the way you bump into someone else and say, hey, you know, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, 5 years ago I borrowed, you know, $500 from you here, years back, and, you know, and then you get back home, they call you up and say, you know, we were thinking, you know, here's a, would you like to, you know, take this responsibility in this position, you know, you get this facility and a house and a car, life insurance and all these kind of things. You know, you say, hey, this is a great day, but, you know, do this thing about Krishna. No one's complaining, no one's bringing up free will here. Was it your free will to make the $500 come or the prasad come? No, but no one minds that, right? So what do you call it? That's what we call it. So landfall, what is it? Windfall, right? It's called a windfall. It just happened. You know? No one's complaining. But now if it was the opposite, you know, you come out and find out there's no prasad because you were in the class and everybody else left class with me and ate everything and left you nothing. And then you find out that, you know, the guy comes and says, hey, you know, you owe me $500, you know, like that. And then someone comes and says, you know, sorry to you, but, you know, all the devotees, you know, just, you know, feel it's difficult working with you, so you're just going to have to get someone else to do this position. So I guess, you know, we'll give you 3 days to get all your stuff out of here. And then it starts to be, you know, what is it, karma, is it free will, is it immediately? Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's always remember that point when this discussion comes up. So the point is karma and free will are non-different. You know, how do you say it? You start an activity by your free will, it will give a result, that's the karma. Right? The whole cycle is called karma, but that free will, that is, because at every moment you can choose, you're not forced to. The modes of nature will put pressure, but they will never put pressure more than what you have, than what you can make the choice to take it or not. Right? By situation, we may be overwhelmed, because of our own desires and our own conditioning. But it will never be more than what you can handle. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the results of our activities are always from free will. But because it may be so much distant in the past and we can't connect it, then that's where we kind of doubt. because I can't see the direct connection. Because it may be from last life, or, you know, sometimes activities change. We don't connect it to it. You know, does that make sense? Sometimes it's not obvious like that. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Then Krishna's mercy means is that the results of our free will come at a time when it will be opportune for our Krishna consciousness. Right? Because if we're sincere, then Krishna will do it in such a way that it will enhance our Krishna consciousness. If we're not sincere, then we'll do it in the other. It's just like this. The person is not so sincere, therefore if things go wrong with them in devotional service, they'll reject devotional service. Because they'll be looking at devotional service as a religious process for economic gain. Right? Or to remove their anxieties. Or to gain knowledge. Right? I can't gain knowledge in here, I gotta go to Mangalarti, I gotta go check around, so I gotta do this, I can't study all day like I'd like to. So therefore I'll go back home, live with my mommy, and go back to university. That's a jigyasa. Right? They're not able to get the economic facility and position and all that. That's an artaka. It's too much anxiety dealing with the devotees, the service, and the artaka. So those three kinds of people surrender to Krishna, but unless they move on, that they're trying to please Krishna, then they'll fall prey to the same things that they turn to Krishna for if they don't find it fulfilled. So Krishna will test. You know, one has devotion to Krishna. So is that actual, or is it only because he's fulfilling either your anxiety, your money, or your knowledge? And if he doesn't do that, then will you turn against him? So that's always a test. Because he doesn't have, I'd say he is independent, therefore he can test. Right? Someone who's attached can't test, because what if they turn away? Right? That's the point. And that's how, like, the child becomes spoiled, because the parents can't push it. Because if the child turns away, then their whole purpose in the child is what they're going to get from the child. So if the child turns away, they get nothing, so then they won't do it. But their point is they're independent. Right? And child is part of the scene, then in dealing with child, they can push standards. The child may get upset, they this, they that, but it doesn't matter, because this is the standard. They like it, they take it. They don't like it, what can you do? Then you'll see the child will take it. They don't become spoiled. So because of attachment, then you can't do it. But Krishna is not attached. He can deal with anything and not be attached to it. That's his independence. So he exclusively can do that. Energy cannot do that. Energy is dependent. There's no question of at any time, place, or circumstance being independent. So anything that energy deals with, they become attached to it. Because they connect themselves to Krishna through it. So they're attached to it. So the point is if Krishna is seen, then that attachment is real. So therefore their body, which is spiritual, is real. Their particular dress, their particular name, their particular family, their particular services, they're all spiritual. So being attached to those, because they're connected to Krishna, then it enhances. But in the material world, we're attached to things that aren't connected to Krishna. So therefore it takes us away. Or we connect those, we dovetail those, the secondary. We connect them to Krishna. So as long as our devotion to Krishna is prominent, then our attachment to those will go away. And then you'll be attached to Krishna, we'll bridge that. And then those services in the spiritual world, those eternal services, will become attached to those. But Krishna is independent. Okay? The gopis go to the rasa dance. There's no question of them goofing about that they're leaving. They don't come out there when Krishna comes, and then they go, well, hey, it's nice out here, I guess we'll go back now. They don't do that. They're attached. But Krishna does, because he's detached. He can come, oh, what are all you girls coming out here for? It's a pleasant full moon night, you must be coming out to see the forest, and that, you know, it's dangerous here, it's night, there's lions and tigers and bears and all that stuff. so maybe you should go back now, you know. So he can do that because he's independent. But energy can't do that. So that's the whole point. So therefore, Krishna can test. Like that. He can test. So then, because he's independent. And so we decided, no, no way. He prefer us to surrender. But if we don't, go away. Go away. He's that kind. You know. Like that. So that's the living entity. So that testing, that's Krishna's mercy. At the same time, this giving facility is also Krishna's mercy. You know, we shouldn't think, wow, I'm in a roll, or, you know, when you're hot, you know, it's like it's happening, you know, because I'm so together, it's all. No, it's just Krishna's mercy. Krishna can arrange it the other way also. Because that's the point, is by the modes of nature, just comes when it's coming. So if you've done so much pious activities, all the things may start coming at once. Then you can say yes, yeah, because I was together before, so now I'm getting resolved. But Krishna moves anything around however he likes. He's not obliged that you did this thing and it's supposed to, you know, today you're supposed to get the result. He can move it to tomorrow or yesterday. Whatever is better for your Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. So in other words, for the devotee, when they become fixed in Krishna consciousness and they're stable in their Krishna consciousness, then all facility can either be there or not, it doesn't matter to them. Therefore, sometimes devotees do such a long time, then you see so much facility comes, now they become attached to that, distracted, it goes away. Yeah. So that's the point is, we have to be able to deal with it. The whole point is that we enjoy through Krishna's enjoyment. And the devotees enjoy it. The sooner we get used to the idea that my happiness comes through others' happiness, the easier Krishna consciousness will be. Right? Just others' pleasure is piety. But others' pleasure is connected to Krishna. That's the real thing. Because the energy cannot enjoy anything directly. Only Krishna, Purusha, can enjoy directly. Right? That's the principle. So, if we're connected to Him, then that medium, whatever we're using, then we become satisfied. Because Krishna is pleased. That makes sense? So like that. So then, the point is very clearly, is all karma comes from our free will. There's nothing that's happening to us that we did not have a choice in at some point in time. Right. Then, and Krishna's mercy is that he either makes it, he reduces it or puts it whenever he likes, whatever is better for our Krishna consciousness. We may like it or not, but Krishna has a plan. Does that make sense? Energy is attached. It's supposed to be attached, but the tapasya can either be directly or indirectly attached to Krishna. Means you can be either directly attached to Krishna through the internal energy, or indirectly attached to Krishna through his external energy. The tapasya is always connected to another energy. But tapasya doesn't connect directly with Krishna. Because tapasya means it's in between. Right? So you can either indirectly go to Krishna through material energy or go to Krishna through internal energy. So internal is the natural position. What's the difference between the energies? What's the difference between the dealings? Or what are the dealings? Are they attached, the base on attachment? In the transcendental world. Okay, is it based on attachment? Yes, it's attached to Krishna. but where our attachment to Krishna is through other energies. Does that make sense? So there's a hierarchy of these energies. Radharani, she's directly attached to Krishna. Right? But Lalita and the others are to Krishna through her. Rupa Goswami and the others are attached, are connected to Lalita. We're connected to them. So naturally we're attached to those who we're connected through. Because if you're not attached, then you fall away. Attached means it's attached, like you attach something to the wall, and then it's connected. So it's natural that we'll have attachment for those persons who are connected to Krishna too. Right? So anybody who inspires us or engages us or somehow does is involved in the sphere of what we're connected to Krishna to, or it will be attached to. That's natural. That's why the devotees have such a nice interaction. So if there's not, then what's the connection? You know? So, yeah.
So that culture then is reflected here. That's why you see, like, let's say with the third world, that you have a relationship with somebody, and then let us say there's something that you have to deal with that's unpleasant. You will still deal with that unpleasantness through the relationship. The relationship has to be maintained, right? Because the interaction is based on that relationship, and that relationship then goes back. Right? So in other words, it's the natural perverted reflection. Right? Because that's the way it works in the spiritual world. First world works on a whole different thing. They have this, they've worked out this psychological ruse called hats. So they don't have to follow any culture. I put on this hat, we're best friends. They put on this hat, we're enemies. We can argue, bitter, say anything, nasty, politics, anything. And then when that, I just take off the hat, put on the other, and we can be best of friends. So that's not human life, because in the spiritual world, humans don't do that. So that's because of impersonalism. There's no attachment, so there's no culture. That's why impersonalists don't follow culture, because they don't connect with people. Well, the karmis do, but they misjudge it and go into the material energy instead of going towards Krishna. Okay? So that's the whole point, is that is without the devotees relating to each other on the proper platform, they can't go back to Godhead, because in the spiritual world you have to relate on the proper platform. You won't be happy, because there is no such thing as just going plunking down yourself right next to Krishna and just interacting with him and forgetting all these other people. It doesn't happen. We are not the energy that's connected directly to Krishna. We are marginal potency. We are expanded from internal potency. That means internal potency is connected to Krishna. We're connected to internal potency. Unless we're connected to others, we are not connected to Krishna. So that's why Lord Chaitanya says, without the achar, there's no going back to Godhead. You can follow the sadhana perfectly. You don't have achar, you don't go back to Godhead. Bus. End of conversation. Like that. That's why the neophyte is said to be one who is following but doesn't connect with other devotees. Right? While the Madhyama recognizes and appreciates devotees and connects themselves to Krishna through devotees. That's the difference between the two. Right? So that's where you make the distinction between a Madhyama and a neophyte. If they value devotees, if they're still talking about their hats and all that, they're neophytes. Hats in service, and they maintain the, means they may have to be more firm because they're dealing with this, but they maintain the relationship, that's then, you know, more advanced, because they're able to do their service and maintain the etiquette. But if the etiquette's dropped, that's a neophyte. Because without etiquette, there is no Krishna consciousness. How can you say you're Krishna conscious? Can't. Because without the devotees, there is no Krishna consciousness. There's no question we're directly connected to Krishna. That's a fallacy. that's a maybe our desire, because, okay, we can't be the controller and the enjoyer, but at least we can be number two. You know, okay, God's God, okay, I can buy it. I'll fit in just behind him. But all these others, you know. So that's the thing. Because of we desiring to gain something from them we don't get, then we become frustrated and we become angry.
So that's the difficulty. So then we create all this. So frustration creates anger. And then anger erupts, creates loss of intelligence. And then you fall back down to the material pool. It doesn't say great service goes on. Tolerance, forgiveness, these are there. Of course, the pragmatists, these are the fools. Right? But material gain, you know, justice, position, those are not the highest gain. If they were, Mahabharata would be top of the list. Because it shows perfectly how to get Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? It's the clearest of all the scriptures. Because it takes the essence of all scriptures and puts it into place. What is Dharma? What is Artha? What is Kama? And easily understandable by putting it into practical day-to-day activities that we can relate to. Can't get more practical than that. But Narada Muni has a complaint, is that it only is pointing out material life. You know, the spiritual is so covered that you won't catch it. Right? It's there. Someone who understand spiritual life will read Mahabharata and see spiritual life, but someone who doesn't know won't catch it. Right? Plus, for those who are advanced to have to wade through so much stuff, it's not important. Right? Better get down to those pastimes that are more directly or are directly connected. Right? Then that's nicer. Or that show the process how to directly connect yourself. Like, how did others become perfect? Right? What did they follow? Then those activities, how they engage the indirect in Krishna's service. Then that's also then inspiring. Right? Those who are perfect, how they act. Those who are in the process of becoming perfect, how do they act? Like that. So both are, so therefore you see is the 10th canto is those who are already perfect. And the first 9 will be showing the example how to become perfect, even though many of those personalities are already perfect. You know, the Pandavas, they're already perfect. Arjuna, he's eternally with Krishna in the material world. That's his Surup. He's always Naranarayan, right? They're always here. You don't have Naranarayan in the spiritual world. You have him here. And he's eternally there. He's already perfect, but he shows how to become perfect. Right? Through Gita, through all these things. Then, all these things, we learn how to become perfect. So that's the first 9 cantos. Then 10th canto is those who are perfect. Right? So therefore, again, you see Arjuna and the Pandavas in the 10th canto. Right? Because they are playing the parts of conditioned souls, we take their example. But because they are liberated souls, then they fall in 10th canto. Does that make sense? Anything else?
So your explanation, it was clear that it is very hard to draw a line what is happiness and what is first, because one's happiness can be first for the other one. Right.
Yeah, but even one's happiness is removing one's own distress. It's just that we're so used to it, we don't look at it that way. Just like, let us say, you know, you have to get something done. That's a stress. There's a need to remove the problem of getting it done. So when it's done, you feel happy for that moment. Right? So therefore, the person who feels the most distress is the most happy. Let's say you take cooking. Okay, someone who is an expert cook you say, okay, today we want you to cook, you know, lunch. And it's a simple lunch. There's minimal distress, and there's minimal happiness afterwards. Right? For them, it's an easy thing. You know, there's a little stress where they, you know, get the ingredients, they get all the pots. Once they got those things, then that's their happiness. And then afterwards, it's fine. Others may say, oh, it's fabulous, it's this, it's that. To them, it's okay. You know, it's normal. You know, no big deal. Let's say the person who's not confident of cooking, and they have the same job, they have so much anxiety. And then when they actually finish that cooking, and it worked out, and devotees said it was nice, they're in ecstasy. Because their distress was greater. So that's the whole point, is how much happiness you want, then you have to have that much distress. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything.
So, but there is danger in that happiness. That's what everybody says.
Yeah.
When you are too happy, then you may forget Krishna.
Same
the point, all point, our point is going out to preach it, to preach to these poor people, sad people, and who they are in danger because they are unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Or they say, come and be a big banner, chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
Yes.
That means when they become happy, then they die.
But it's happy in Krishna consciousness. In other words,
even
it's...
in Krishna consciousness, we say that when the devotees, they get this and that, they get people with, you know, material facilities, they get this and that, and they get this...
But it's two different kinds of happiness. So one is removal of pain, the other is connecting yourself to Krishna. So chant Hare Krishna, be happy, means you're connecting yourself directly to Krishna. So that's how you'll actually be happy. Because the root of happiness is satisfaction. See, material life, there's no satisfaction. You can get it, doesn't matter what you do, it's still, there's no satisfaction. There may be a momentary removal of the dissatisfaction because of anxiety by gain. But actual satisfaction or contentment is not gained. Right? It means how much can you go on eating? Yeah, every day, sleeping, mating, defending. It just goes on and on and on. There's no satisfaction. So that's the point, it's different. Well, spiritual is direct. You're connecting the soul to God through His name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So that's actual happiness. So that one is satisfied to be engaged in that eternally. But the material, you're engaged in it, you look there for it, but you're not satisfied from it, but you can't also give it up unless there's an alternative.
But there is formation between this material and the spiritual as well, right? In our stage.
If it is connected to Krishna. If it's connected to Krishna. You are getting your satisfaction through doing your service to Krishna and the results that come from that. Then it's connected to Krishna, so therefore then happiness is there. But now there is a difference. In the beginning, that happiness is because we're attached to the results, so therefore there's a distress in getting that result, and there is a happiness in gaining that result. But it's connected to Krishna. But as one goes on, matures, then the result is for Krishna. So then the anxiety is not material, it's not for ourselves. So that anxiety then on the material platform isn't the same anxiety. So therefore then the satisfaction gained from attaining it is also different. So it's just a matter of taste, of refinement. You know? Like that. So it's means there's very, like you say, cooking. You have very refined cooking, very subtle. You know, there's methods of cooking, like let's say you've made the preparation. Then you take a coal, a hot coal, and you sprinkle a certain spice on it. You know, let's say like fennel. Then you put it in the pot where that preparation is, closed the lid. That will give a slight, subtle, smoked scent of fennel to that preparation. Very subtle. You know, or just slight differences on how you deal with it, what you want out of it, subtlety. So then that's appreciated. You put a bay leaf in or you didn't. So someone who has that subtlety can appreciate the difference. You know. So that's there. If someone is not, you need something more gross. These things aren't there. So use harsher spicing and use more volume. And someone who doesn't, you can use less, more balanced. So then it's also a matter of changing the taste. We're used to gross, and then that's there, but you could fulfill it with something subtler. Because the quality is more. Right? Like that. It means, as far as the taste goes, something not cooked well, then is not going to give much sensation on the tongue. So you'd have to eat more volume of it, or more often of it, to get the same intensity. But if you could appreciate something more well cooked, then in one time with a smaller quantity, you would have gotten the same experience. Does that make sense? So even on the mundane platform, there's a difference, let alone from gross material to the subtle spiritual. That's why this principle is put into motion. It's just like you have a siphon. You know, you have to start, you suck out a little bit of water, and from that then it'll suck everything. So you start it with these material, engaging the material energy in our conditioned nature, and then we purify it. Then in this purified state, then we'll get transcendental happiness. In the beginning, it'll be mixed. Like that. Because the transcendental is there, it's a happiness we've never experienced. But at the same time, because it has the mundane, we can relate to it. But with time, we stop relating to the mundane and start relating to the spiritual. So the thing is it's perfectly matched. It freely flows from one to the next. You know, it just comes naturally. Does that make some sense? So one doesn't have to worry about it. Main thing is to see that whatever you're doing is connected to Krishna. Then whether it's sakam, nishkam, or on the liberal transcendental platform, then it'll work. Does that make some sense? One will develop to the next.
So there is no danger of being spiritual happiness. Because
no.
If you feel anyway used for people, there is no pride or anything that comes from that? Or?
You have to always watch. It's not that... pride comes from pride. Pride comes from false ego. Pride doesn't come from devotional service. Just like devotional service does not have its root in anything mundane, and devotional service is not the cause of anything mundane. So it's neither two separate things. But devotional service can descend into the material, so it becomes spiritualized. But the material cannot ascend into the spiritual. So therefore, because of the results that may come from devotional service, that's not the cause of our pride. That's ourselves. We've decided that our ego is important to us. So now, because of our service, we've done something so nice, we get some position of facility, then we think we're something special. Rather than it's devotional service that creates the facility for devotional service. So the ego itself is simply our own doing. We're not identifying as Krishna's service. If we see ourselves as Krishna's servant, then we won't have that problem. But ego doesn't come because we know it's not us. And you see, the acharya is so much is said about them and what they do and amazing stuff, and they just go, it's not us. You know, or they know the tattva, so they know their position. Like one devotee, I think it was in Calcutta, he was telling Prabhupada, oh, you're so this, you're so that, you're so like that. Prabhupada just stopped him, you know, just stopped and cut him off and said, I know who I am. You know, so it's kind of like, now let's get real. What are you going to do about it? If I'm special, then do something. You know, talk is nice, let's do something. Because this person is always prides himself in pragmatism. So then Prabhupada just caught him on his ego. You know, this glorification is nice, but, you know, he knows he's a pure devotee. He knows he's above the material energy. He knows Maya can't catch him. He knows all these things. But he's not proud of it. It's just the way it is. So now what are you going to do about it? Okay, you're the one that's appreciating it.
therefore you should come in contact and come in line and do something that you will also come to this platform. Otherwise, you know, the talk is nice, the sentiment's good, it's progressive, yes, but now you're a practical person, make it practical. You know, so many times, another devotee in Vrindavan, always be offering prayers, but you know, when Prabhupada is walking forward, he'd be standing in front of Prabhupada and walking backwards, you know, like that. And, you know, once or twice it's pleasant and that. And then Prabhupada would say, you know, you have nothing to do. You have no service. You know, he thought, my service is glorifying Prabhupada. Prabhupada says, no. And then I think he didn't know what to do, and Prabhupada was a puddle, and Prabhupada said, clean it up. Or go sweep here. Go do something, you know. Like that. So it's in other words, when it spontaneously comes from the heart, that moment is appreciated. Moment is like, I should go and glorify Prabhupada. I go there, and yes, you know, Prabhupada, it's in front of everybody, is glorifying, aren't I such a great devotee? I'm glorifying Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada is kind of like, nice, but now do something for Krishna. What's the connection to Krishna? You know, if he's glorifying Prabhupada, but how is that glorification connecting to Krishna? Because Prabhupada is Krishna's representative. He can engage us in Krishna's service. He can give us Krishna. How do we get Krishna? Through engaging in devotional service. So what service are you doing? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. So you know, sentiment has its limit until it's transcendental. You know, like the kid is cute. They do something, it's cute. Everyone smiles, oh, isn't it cute? Then the kid catches that and does it again. And then it's not so cute. Then you do it again, it's kind of like, eat it. Get out of it. You know? So when it just spontaneously happens, nice. But as soon as it becomes a way to get attention or a way to, you know, get in there and that, and then it's like, it loses its taste. So, therefore, it's the point is that the devotional, the activities will give some results, and those results are fine. That one's happy in Krishna Kanda, that's good. But one shouldn't, that shouldn't be one's only motive. There should be the idea to please Krishna also. It's just like Swakya means the wife is being pleased and she's pleasing her husband. Right? So both is going on, but it's a lower platform to the gopis who only interest is to please Krishna. There's no interest in pleasing themselves.
But they are automatically pleased anyway.
Yes, that's the point. They're automatically pleased.
So they know that also.
Yeah. See, here is, on this point, is this is being pointed out as an aspect of devotional service. In the process of Abhideya, that one can identify the steps that are necessary to progress and the obstacles that might come in the way. Therefore, we make this point. One who is attached to the impersonal concept, their whole, or to karma, their whole existence is being happy. So one, it's either by facility and position and, you know, just a nice life, a pious life, wonderful interactions. I'm coming to the Dham, everyone's got forearms, they'll all be so nice and, you know, welcome us with open arms and, you know, invite us open and we don't have to lock our doors, we don't have to watch our children, everything works perfectly, anything goes wrong, everyone's there to help you, blah, blah, blah. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And then they come and it's not like that. They're here with a bunch of other conditioned souls who don't have the same idea of, you know, nice, friendly interactions that went on in my mind. You know, they got a different idea of what's nice interactions. Or, you know, their idea of nice interactions is no interactions. You know, like that. You know, it's like the neighbor is at least 1 kilometer away. You know, so, you know, here it's a little tough for them because they're only, you know, 6 feet. You know, like that. So, then they run into problems. Because then that was the karma. Or jnana is, it's trouble. There's so much trouble. I just want out of the trouble of the material world. And they're willing to be detached to get it. So I'm willing to give up anything like that to get it. So anything that appears that it's taking on something that's a burden will be a problem for them because of their attachment to impersonalism, to jnana. Does that make sense? So these are the two bits. So because of that, then in general we don't make this point. Because the soul is satchitananda, it needs to be happy. We're just pointing out that the happiness you're looking for is inferior, and this happiness is superior. So in between, you may be mistaking material situations that are connected to Krishna, that is the result of the situation that's making me happy, rather than know it's connection to Krishna. See, it's that prasadam is nice. Why is prasadam good? Because Krishna was pleased. Why was it pleased? Because the consciousness of the cook and those who offered and all that was good. So the reason we like it is because Krishna tasted it. You can ask any cook. They cook preparations, they're sure it's a knockout. Nobody liked it. No one even made a comment. And there's other times when they're convinced that they know that they've done something wrong. It's bad, the preparation. And afterwards, devotees say it was excellent. Because for the one, they were confident, so there was no devotion. The other one, their anxiety that Krishna was not going to be pleased. So that devotion made Krishna be angry.
When we say there is suffering and then you get enjoyed, and you enjoy it and you don't suffer, does that mean that people outside are starving, suffering, one day they will get something better?
Anyone suffering is austerity. From austerity you get, facility, enjoyment. And from, but enjoyment, then, because you get attached to it, that creates desire, which creates anxiety or suffering. So that's why it just goes back and forth. We who's happy, tomorrow will be sad, who's sad will be happy. That's why something like I Ching is so easy. You know, its point is if things are going well, don't get too fired up because things will go down, so be careful, so you don't crash. If things are bad, don't worry, you just be in there, be patient, and develop your character and everything, and it'll go up and you'll be happy. That's all. It's just like, you got this wheel, and half is out of the water and half is in the water. So when you're underwater, they say, don't worry, you just hold on, you'll be out of the water. Right? And the guy on the top who's in ecstasy, don't get too fired up because things will go down. So that's I Ching. Right? It's easy. So that's the thing. And so many UC philosophies in the world work on that. What's good will go bad, what's bad will go good. It's just always changing. So that's why Krishna's saying, don't become elated in happiness, not that happiness won't come. And don't become overly disturbed and distressed. Don't lament and distress. They come automatically as the seasons change. It was so hot before, but cold is coming. It's cold now. Right? It'll get colder. So it just moves back and forth. That's the whole thing. That you can't be satisfied. We'll say spring is nice because it's not hot or cold, but it's not going to stay that way. So that's all. Or we say, okay, well, I'll move to a climate. I'll go to Malaysia, right? It's always, I think the difference in degree between hot and cold is 2 degrees. Right? But for vacation, where do they go? Right? Somewhere with a stone. I saw that once. I thought it was very funny. And just over a few days, I was in the New York airport and the Los Angeles airport. And it was summertime, so it was vacation. So in the Los Angeles airport, there's huge, they hang from the ceiling, these huge, like, banisters, advertising, going to New York, you know, enjoy this, enjoy that, go for a vacation, you know, enjoy there. Okay, you know, and then you get on the plane, and when I arrive in New York, then there's huge banners that say, you know, visit L.A. You know, in other words, it's just whatever for you is normal is boring.
Wherever we are not there.
Yeah, it's just like you go to, let's say you go to Peru, right? You have plains and you have high mountains, nothing in between. The people in the mountains want to go down and see what are all the blokes going down in the ocean. And the guys in the ocean every now and again want to go, what are all those crazy guys doing up in the mountain? It's just the way it is. It's, you know, it's like, you know, the story of the city rat and the country rat, right? You know, each one to visit the other for a change, but they, you know, they all want to go back to their place. So that's the material world. It's just whatever it is, happiness is found in the contrast. Like that, as soon as the contrast is neutralized, there's no happiness is also neutralized. As the distress is moving towards the neutral, then happiness is tasted. And as it gets closer, then it's less, because the less the distress, the less the happiness. When you're one bite away from being full, your distress is very minimal. Therefore, that last one bite doesn't taste as good. While the first bite, you're so far from it, that tastes the best. So that's the fifth. Is therefore, that's why the Brahmins, they don't endeavor for material facilities or have material desires. So they enjoy less, but they suffer less. Right? And they try to transfer it to transcendence. So they are satisfied in the material world. So therefore, actually, they're more happy than anybody. And they transfer to transcendence. Why you see the Kshatriya or the Vaishya, because so much passion is there. Then their needs are so great, so they're happy. You know, you see Santanu Maharaj. It means when he sees, when he smells this fragrance, his happiness is so great, his desire is so much. Then when he sees the girl, then, you know, that's it. He's finished. You know, like that. Then when he goes to the father and asks for a hand in marriage and he refuses, then his distress. You know, so his need for this girl is so great, but then when it's thwarted, he's so unhappy, right? And then he goes back, he can't function, he can't run his kingdom, nothing. So then Devavrata, then he works this out for him, and then he goes, gets the girls, takes the vow that he'll never get married, his, so therefore you won't have any sons on the throne, her children will be the heirs of the throne, blah, blah, you know, that's what destroyed the whole dynasty, whatever it is, he agreed to it. Then when he brings that girl, then his father is in ecstasy again, right? Still, in either case, the minister's got to run the kingdom, because he's not able. He's either too much in distress, pining for the girl, or too much in happiness, being with the girl. In either case, he can't do anything. Right? Whatever it is, so many children and all that, and then Ganga Devi leaves, then he gets back to running his kingdom. Right? So that's the point, is the passion that they go out. Your happiness is more, your distress is more. So that's why for the devotee, they try to minimize it. Bring it as close to the center as possible, and then be satisfied, be content. Because contentment is the root of happiness. Right? So that's the thing, it's a different kind of happiness. If you're content with what you have, there's no anxiety. Right? So Vaikuntha means no anxiety. So at least bottom line, they're happy because they're not in anxiety. So it's a different kind of happiness. We're so conditioned that happiness means removing the pain, that contentment doesn't mean anything to us. That's foolish. You know, it's for lazy people. You get out there and do something. You know, endeavor, that's the, no. Activity is important. Therefore, the Brahmin who's contented still has to be endeavoring for spiritual development. So to be lazy, that's foolish. The karma is better, exactly. But to be content and active, that's the best. That's Naishkarmya. That's what Narada Muni preaches. Is perform your duties without attachment. They can only be detached if you're content. Right? Then you'll see everything, you know, as Mahārāja just said, as Krishna's mercy. It's not a matter of karma or this or that. Because then whatever you get, Krishna's mercy, you get, you have, you don't get, it doesn't matter what that is. Does that make sense?
Five levels
of consciousness and their happiness.
Like
the what is the happiness of the five levels of consciousness? The difference between anamoya, the first platform, means their happiness is fulfilling their own senses. When the senses meet the sense objects, then they are happy. Pranamoya means when someone else's senses meet the sense objects, you're happy. You know, but still, that's only the second level. That's why for the materialist, it's very elevated. It's considered spiritual. But for the religious person or the devotional person, it's still very low grade. Better than anamoya, it's still low grade. For the religious person, you know, means following actually according to the scriptures, not speculation. Then, for them, the happiness is duties well performed. The satisfaction of performing the duties properly, and the satisfaction of working with others who also are the same. That bond, the relationship that develops from that, the camaraderie that comes like that. Because in material relations, ultimately that's all that's left. You know, you have a 90-year-old man and woman sitting in a rocking chair. You know, there is no, sense gratification. So it's simply the camaraderie. They can only think back how they're still together. You know, and how they did this together and that together, and so it still goes back to duties. Because ultimately, that's the maximum you can get out of material energy. Right? So then, the vijnanamoya means detachment. They're attached to renunciation. The more detached they can become, the more they can pull out of the material energy, the more happy they are. And then anandamoya means the more you're connected to Krishna, then the happier you become. Does that make sense? So in other words, the first one's needs that fulfilling creates happiness is his own senses. The second level is fulfilling someone else's senses. So as they become familiar, you're happy. You know, it's just like the... Yeah.
My friends,
like,
what is that for me?
Yes, connect, it's yours. It is, pranamoya means it's possession. You have to identify with it because it's part of your identity. First one is I am my senses, I am the body. The second one is the other person with the senses.
But it's giving up to me. It's my
yeah, mind. It's still connected to my values. The third one is then performing your duties. Is that the need is for proper performance of duties. Like you see, Kunti gets an anxiety because she has spoken something to her sons. You share it equally. You know, what they have begged. So now she's anxiety. How is my religious principles going to be maintained? Because how is one woman going to marry many men? It's just not done. But her need for religious performance is so great, that's more valuable for her than economic gain and sense gratification. That makes the difference between a Kshatriya and a Vaishya. A Kshatriya will lose anything for religious principles. And a Vaishya will give up any religious principle for economic gain. This is the difference.
So what is the deep meaning if she would say, oh, I'm sorry, what I say was... You know,
but the point is that it's been spoken. So the principle of anxiety here is what is spoken must be true. Brahmas and Kshatriyas must speak true, must speak according to Shastra. So that the word is not good is an anxiety for them. But because economics is a mix of truth and non-truth, especially business, therefore one can not feel anxiety and cheating on this. So you use what's practical. In other words, it's a difference in result. The difference being is truth is the result being desired by Kunti. And you know, whatever it is, social or political or economic harmony is the other angle that you've just presented. Is that okay? It's not a. It's not progressive. Let's say it doesn't give good. How you say? The result may not be so good by them trying to follow what she said. So therefore, let's change that. You know, she can just say, "Oh yeah, it doesn't matter." I didn't know, or, and no one would say anything.
Yeah.
But the point is because truth is the important thing to her. Therefore, then the consideration becomes how to fulfill that.
Because there would only be the family members, right?
Yes, but
somebody else from the side.
Yes, but the point is it depends upon the level of consciousness. What is the game? Is truth game or is economics game?
Right. You were mentioning in the class also that you can take one point, spiritual point of Shastra, and then do it in a way this way or that way. So they could maybe take it and say, okay, then
they could maybe, but what is yes, but my point is here, it's true, you could do that.
Yeah.
But what is the motive for that approach?
The motive is just to don't disturb the other's mind and have one woman for the five men and then
okay. So that means it's a matter of gain and loss. So then what level of consciousness is that motive put it at? My second or the third? Because truth is a religious principle. Not disturbing other minds is part of religious, but it's sub-religious principles that must be based on a religious principle.
So that means whatever she says should be done, and there was no other way to do some sacrifice or something like that. I mean, I'm just
but still that's gain and loss. I do this and I get a result from it.
Not the result, but neutralize what I
say. Yeah, still it's a matter of result, gain and loss. See, these are the levels of consciousness at work.
So it was that important?
Yes, that's the difference. Is a kshatriya will lose the world to keep his word.
She was a kshatriya?
Well, you can't get more kshatriya than that. She was the, she is the aunt of Krishna. So, Krishna's father's sister, pretty kshatriya. Like that. Yeah. Yeah, it's like you can't get around this one. There wasn't any, there was no bourgeois tendencies here. So that's why you see kings that don't walk out on the kingdom. They don't, you know, grab a few things and put it in their pockets before they walk out. No, they walk out clean. They walk in, they get the whole thing, and they walk out with nothing. Right? So that's it's just the way it is. The extremes are there, but because it's touched with that element of the Dharma, and that truth must be there. That's why Arjuna and Yudhishthira, all that, it's always a point of they've made a vow, and that vow has to be fulfilled. Arjuna has said he will get, you know, this, or Bhima said he will catch Ashwatthama. Arjuna said he'd kill him. Now he said it, now he's brought the guy back. Draupadi wanted him killed, but then seeing him, that she thinks, no, he's the son of our teacher. In other words, she dropped into Annamoy. My senses, you know, or into Pranamoy. I want revenge for my sons. Or my anxiety, I want, you know, some retribution here. So then, I'm in anxiety, someone else better be in anxiety. So then they come, and then she says, well, actually, he's the son of our teacher. Therefore, he's respectable by us. You know, he is a Brahmin, you know, everybody makes him a mistake, so therefore you can't kill him. But Arjuna already said he will. So now, how to work that out? So, if there is a higher principle, then you bring it in line with that. But it has to function still on the platform of religion. Religion is nourished by religion, not irreligion. So, then it's found, okay, then means there's killing a Brahmin means physically he's killed. Right? But there are sins that are equal to killing a Brahmin. You will get the same reaction. So defaming a Brahman is one such rule, right? So, and within that comes, means you can also shave the head, right? So you put that two together, means then he's defaming him. So it's equal to killing a Brahman. And he's famous for Ajula in his head, he's born with it. And then I remember Ashutama was born with that jewel on his head. So removing that, then yeah, and it's being done in as a form of punishment. It's not like Karna where he gained fame for removing the earrings and kavacha that he's born with. This is the opposite. So he's defamed, so therefore he's as good as killed. But at the same time, physically he's uninjured, and except for the jewel, nothing, I don't even think they would technically just cut it off. You know, they wouldn't take it. You know? So then he killed the Brahmin. But in that way, same with Yudhishthira. You know, Arjuna made a vow that anyone who told him to put down his gun, leave a bow, you know, just saying, you're not a Kshatriya, you've got to put down your bow. Anyone who said that, he would kill. So Yudhishthira left the battlefield because Arjuna was involved with the Samsaptakas. You know, that was their business, was just keeping him busy so everybody else could fight. So Karna went after Yudhishthira and they defeated him, he had to leave the battlefield. So then Arjuna was very worried. So then when he got rid of the Samsaptakas, then he came to Yudhishthira. And Yudhishthira figured the only reason that Arjuna would leave the battlefield, because he's such a great a warrior, would be to tell him that he's killed Karna, because Karna was the greatest anxiety. If he's dead, then you leave the battlefield, because, you know, and the rest of them were, you know, small time. So he comes in, he only came to see if Yudhishthira was okay. So then, in doing that, when Yudhishthira, he's so happy Yudhishthira, when he sees him, Arjuna hadn't spoken, he's laying, lavishing all these praises on him. And then after doing that, then he finds out that he hasn't killed Karna. Then it's like, you've left the battlefield, you haven't killed Karna, you've come here just to see how I am, just some sentiment. You know, it's his point, what kind of worry do you should put down your bow? So then Arjuna is like, now he has to kill his brother. You know, because he's made this vow. Right? So then he doesn't know what to do. Then Krishna suggests that, you know, for a Kshatriya, infamy is worse than death. So therefore he mentions all these things that are not, you know, it's because of you, the gambling masters, you, this, that, he just goes on and on and on and on. Then when Yudhishthira is feeling very bad, then it's done. You know, then they get together and they're not, you know, they're very upset that they each disturb the other, and so they work everything out. You know, so Krishna had some fun.
What does mean for people in general, like ourselves, when you say something, what does it mean?
It depends upon, therefore, it depends on the value of the person. You know, means a gentleman is someone who's considered his word means something. He can say, I will do this, or if you do this, you'll get this facility. And you do it without anything written or without others, and they keep that word, then you say that person's a gentleman. You have to respect that person. That person should not be taken advantage of. Like that. And someone who just changes it, this and that, then that person you can't get very intimate with and can't trust. Like that, you may deal however much works, but they can't be confidential. They can't be intimate. So for the relationship with such a person can't be very deep. So that's the whole point. So because the king has to be trusted by the people, that means anything he says has to happen. It's also another rule of the Kshatriyas is any work they take up, they have to finish. They can't not finish it. Like that. Because that's the mode of passion. To take up a work, not finish it, oh well, they go on to the next work. It's no big deal, you didn't finish. So what? Do the next one. So, because his goodness is there, they have to finish. So a king should not take up a work he cannot finish. Right? Like that. A business, you'll take on more contracts than you can handle. A laborer will take on more work, jobs than he can handle.
But a Brahmin and a Kshatriya should not take on more than they can do perfectly. Like that. Otherwise, people will lose faith in them. Because what they say means nothing. He said to do this and he didn't do it, maybe in other things he says don't also mean anything. So that's why the word for Brahmins and Kshatriyas is very important.
You wouldn't
you wouldn't say that. Devotee would not use that. It means that is used by someone else towards the devotee.
But when devotee says that, that's
yeah, about themselves,
wrong,
it's,
right?
It's not.
Definitely, that's what I wanted to know because
it means it's not that they can be pointing out if it's someone who they are instructing. They can point out that this is the proper mentality for you to have.
No, I mean when you do some nonsense and you tell your disciples or your followers that, you know, I did the nonsense, I agree, I'm sorry about this, I apologize, but you know, what I did was, you know, we remember how many times I have forgiven you and now I'm for you to forgive me.
It depends on the attitude.
No, it's
so here this attitude is there because that's how you tell. How do you tell bhakti? Right? The person has done an activity. They've done it as devotion. Another person has done it just to catch your attention so that you can, you know, get some facility. Right? Bhakti bhakti chaya lapa. Right? It means too much devotion is a sign of a thief. So you have to see what is the context and the mood in which that point is made. The point is if the disciple doesn't know and can lose faith because they're judging spiritual life on justice and morality, then it can be pointed out to them, though normally someone else would be doing the pointing out.
Exactly.
But it's not, the point is not wrong, is that it's actually other things are to be considered. You have to consider it in a bigger picture. But if done out of pride, if it is done, you know, in arrogance, these kind of things, then you would say this is inappropriate. But if it's done in, you know, humility and well-wishing for the other person, that the attitude they have will be bad for the spiritual life, it could be used. But in general, it wouldn't be. You know? So that's the point, is that this platform of justice and morality, if it's connected to Krishna, is very useful. But if it's not connected to Krishna, it's nice, but it may get in the way.
Well, like you say, we can connect anything and everything to Krishna, and we can disconnect anything and everything from Krishna, because devotees are so expert, they have so much devotion, love, and the knowledge.
Yeah.
They study a lot, and they so anything you say about a person, they can, you know, even if person is the total nonsense, they can make him a saint out of it. Or opposite, if person is saintly person, they can make nonsense out of it.
Yeah.
So they're very expert, you know, that's what I'm saying. You don't know what is in between, you know.
The point is,
everybody was criticizing this saintly personality, you know, and now they say, you know, the opposite. So it becomes really confusion, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You can take the shastras and use for your self-gratification, prajalpa, and everything. What is that? That is your expert prajalpa, whatever, I mean.
So the point is that what do the acharyas say? That's how it has to be interpreted and presented. If they use it in this way, so the example has to be given in that way. So it won't be used in another situation. You know, it has to be a similar situation. So then that's the way it has to be used.
The thing is, so expert, we can make even that happen. That situation, we can match.
That's it.
So, this is the situation. Now, I am a guru, I did this nonsense, and now you please forgive me. I agree, I did this nonsense, but you still continue your faith on me, and this is your test. The Krishna is testing you, how faithful you are to me.
But the point is, unless you know the relationship between those two persons in discussion, how will you actually know?
No, it's a public. It's publicly discussed.
Publicly discussed, but he's not talking to the public. He's talking to specific people.
because the point is that it's public, that itself is nonsense. And the people that allow it to go public are nonsense. Because the point is relationship between people, that is a sacred thing. And then what needs to be known by others is known. And what's not to be known is not known. No one can say they have the right to know something that's not theirs. It's not their right. You know. It's not. Everyone has their duties, and within their duties, that's their right. Krishna says you have the right to perform your devotional service. You're specific. Family, the family still has rights. There's things that the grandmother knows about the finance of the house that others do not have the right to know. Because by knowing it, it will simply disturb them, so therefore they don't have the adhikar, the qualification to know. Okay, you cannot close your eyes, but the point is why is this there in the first place?
Why what?
Why is there in the first place? This would be something that would be known between this person and the few persons that are involved. So therefore, there's no such thing as confidentiality. So therefore, if there's no confidentiality, there's no trust.
Because there's 3,000 disciples.
3,000 disciples. So therefore, then it's not important for them. Just like you have a man, he's a devotee, he bumps into a woman. It doesn't matter that she's had sex with 30 men before she's come to him. And then it's his right to know all the details, which one she used the condom with, what positions he used, how many times. It's like you like the woman, you don't. You trust her, you don't. And the same with you. How many women you've been with, right? So that's not the thing. So the point is does the relationship work to be progressive in Krishna consciousness? So they've heard, and for them it's not a big deal. So then they move on. And if they're able to move on and progress, glorious. If they're not, then they should take Siksha somewhere else where they do have faith. Because the point is this is what the acharyas say. If the spiritual master has a difficulty, he's not to be rejected. But if he's so entrenched that this is the important thing for him, devotional life is not, or the philosophy he starts, his philosophy starts to become Mayavad or some other thing, he takes up some other path, then they'll be rejected because they're not connected to Krishna.
Excuse me, we're just mentioning that order of Kshatriya and Brahmana is more than anything else. So when you say, you mentioned that when you say something and don't follow, then how do we know that previously what we have done and in the future what we are going to do, right?
But the point is are you the Vaishya that can say that?
Okay,
disciples can say that, but everything that you've done has been perfect?
No.
Then? So that's the point. You can't expect perfection out of a guru if you're not perfect.
How is that?
The point is you're going to get what you deserve. You go into the store with 10 rupees, you can buy 10 rupees. You go into the store with 100 rupees, you can buy 100.
That means we have a...
Yes, according to your faith, you're going to get a guru. That's what it means.
No, that's what I was meaning.
That's what I'm meaning.
No, but I want to know more about it.
Okay, but just accept that point, then we move forward.
I accept that.
Okay, so then you have to put into it that you are part of the equation. You also have to remember that your nonsense goes to your guru, and he has to burn that off. And if it gets too much, 3,000 disciples can do a lot of nonsense, especially today.
I know.
So, therefore, if he has trouble trying to help you and he's rejected, then that disciple is not a very good disciple. If he's gotten it together and can continue, then what he's done for you and what he's willing to do for you, then one has to see that. Otherwise, one is an impersonalist. And it's this lack of personalism in our movement that is destroying it. This is the problem. Someone's done something for you. Right? Let's say you had a criminal. And this criminal deserves to be hanged for what he's done. Now, he could stay in hiding and not be caught. But a situation comes up where he comes forward and comes out into the public to save somebody's life. Now, what would you say now after he saved that person's life? Then everyone goes, thank you, and then they hang up. Would you say that's right? Or do you say that his endeavor for this, he sacrificed himself, his own thing? These others should be kind of like put aside. You know, or you have a bunch of criminals, and then one criminal, then he'll give information so that the whole criminal operation can be stopped. They're given some consideration. They're not tried the same as the other criminals. So even though something's been done wrong, it becomes adjusted with other situations. It's not black and white. You know, it's just like you have salt. It's salty. You have sweet. It's sweet. But if you mix the two, it's got both. And if it's got more salt, it's a salty preparation, like a chutney. I mean, like, you know, like that, or a subject. It's got more sweet, then it'll be a chutney. You know, like that. So you have to judge all the things considered.
I understand. Therefore, appreciation, therefore, all the good qualities to, in order to say something about someone. That's clear. But the way you mention is that in this, all these 3,000 disciples were 10 rupees, $10.
Yeah, and then this one disciple here is saying it was a 10 rupee guru. And I'm not going to tolerate that. That guru is my godbrother, and I'm not going to let you step on his head. He may be your disciple, your guru. He's my godbrother.
No, I understand.
And so my godbrother is going to be there with me in the spiritual world. That's an eternal relationship. Yours, you can choose whether he is or not. You can decide to keep him or reject him, and you can connect yourself with someone else.
Yeah.
But this person is my godbrother. And so I expect a little decorum when you're speaking about someone who's so senior and was so dear to Prabhupada and did things that no one else has ever done in this movement. And if that's not considered, and someone has some problem because of the modes of nature, then I don't consider this person worth, you know, a very great character. It means they may be a great moralist, but they cannot see, they can only see black and white. They can't see shades of gray. And my point is unless you can see shades of gray, then yes, it's true. That's why the Vedic culture is so strict on these points, because most people are just moralists and they're not devotees. So they cannot distinguish between a higher level and a lower. They can't tell the difference between religion and morality. And they can't tell the difference between religion and spirituality. Therefore, the Vedic culture is so strict on these things.
We have to learn more about these things.
Yes, you have to learn more, because the point is you have to see the thing. Here it's a matter of indignation, but the point is indignation, what does it have to do with spiritual life?
What is indignation?
Indignation means it's a combination of like disappointment and anger at the same point. Where angry is just angry. Indignation is like kind of like repulsed or, you know, like this. It's more of a combination. It's a more complicated emotion. Is that we're upset, you know, because we feel that there's something's wrong, you know, more, you know. You know, there may be a feeling of being cheated, being let down, being this, so one can become indignant like that. So it's natural. So the point is the reaction is natural, but the point is one has to see that there's more involved here, because the point is Maya is illusion and Krishna is not. So if one has an ocean of, if one has done, one has, you know, 100 good marks in Krishna, and there's one mark in illusion, that illusion, is we always have to remember, is shadow. It doesn't have any meaning. If one attaches oneself to it, then it's a problem. The guru is attached, involved, then it's a problem. But if they pull back and see that this is crazy, then they're out of that illusion. It's gone. It's past. It's history. And to dwell on it is a mode of ignorance. To look at it and gain from it that, okay, these situations came up, so therefore this problem came up, one learns from that. You know, that's always to be learned. But one doesn't dwell on it. One moves forward. because that's progressive. Because it's also said is that by dwelling in the past, it's the mode of ignorance. So then one will attach oneself more to material energy. Because then it's like what I'm in control of, I can trust. So it brings it down to anumana, rather than what, and our independence from God. What I am in control of, then I will be my gain and safety. My safety I will take care of because I'm in control, and the gain is mine. You know, so it takes us away from Krishna. So it's a matter of looking at it like this. Is the person still able to take us forward? Like that. The consciousness is such and corrected and everything, so I couldn't move forward. Okay. Then let's see. Careful, but we'll move forward. If it's a matter of no, the person is so entangled in that they can't offer anything, so therefore I pull back. And I will look for other sources of that inspiration and direction and that I need. But at the same time is I have gained so much from the person in the past, so that will be respected and I will not throw that out. That would be unkind. That would be foolish, you know. So that I will keep. But I can't move forward. Just like we were saying about the bus going to Calcutta. The bus is broken down, you know, the steam coming out of the engine, you know, the wheels are flat, you know, everything's like that. And you just know and forget it. You're going to catch the next bus. You know, but it has flat tire, they say in 10 minutes we'll be up and running, then you sit around and wait. You know, especially if the next bus is not coming for an hour, so you know, you wait 10 minutes, you go. But if it's like that bus in 10 minutes is ready, it takes off and you sit at the side of the road, no, I'm not going in this bus, because it's not progressive, but it's already gone. You know, then that wouldn't be good. So one has to actually analyze the whole situation and look at it. Can this person still help us? If so, take advantage. If not, find someone else or a combination. They can still help us to this degree. Okay, 50-50 or 50, you know, whatever. There's still somehow in the picture.
But these analyzing can take a long time sometimes.
Yes, there's no rush.
Because you're seeing people on the road before you start already, and people after you they're coming, they start there. Mm-hmm. And then you say, my God, I have to be careful, or maybe I have to take my walking stick and go on with Prabhupada a little bit and see what's happening in the future. That's also possible, right?
Because yes, but you should have been going on with Prabhupada from the beginning.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that you haven't then.
Yeah, otherwise, there's like group of the world that if you don't take reinitiation, then you're in trouble. And the other group says, forget it, you know, just Prabhupada, and then you know that it's a contradiction.
Yeah.
And then again, they can prove. Like I said, the bodies are expert proving things, you know, shastically, that this is right what you do, and then other one next time you come and they prove the exact opposite that.
But then you have to know the facts. So if you want to balance the two, you have to go, what's the rules that both of those supposedly opposing issues came from? You have an issue, you have two points on it. So if they're both quoting scripture, that means both of those have a source behind them where they come from. Right? It's just like this. Let's take one example. You have the holy name, which is the original name. Right? From Krishna's name expands the Kama Gayatri. From the Kama Gayatri expands the other Gayatris. And from that expands the Brahma Gayatri. And from that you get Om.
Brahma Gayatri was not the first one?
No, Brahma Gayatri is the last one. Yeah. So then it comes to the reflection. So the last one's the first one.
Alright.
So first thing you go through is Om. From the seed of Om, then you get Gurupurvaswa. From that you get the Brahma Gayatri. From that you get Purushashukta. From that you get the Veda. Right? From the Veda you get the Smritis. So therefore, if there's a point that there's a contradiction, you have to go back to its original. Both these points have to be based in scripture. Where do they go back to? There's a common point. Otherwise, they wouldn't be connected to the same thing. So then you have to go back to that. You know, that will reconcile the two opposing viewpoints because that's always going on. Because people will catch the detail because it works. They can see it through that. The realization is through that particular example. So therefore, that example is very important to them. So they will base everything around that. That depending how expert they are, they may be able to fit it into everything, may not. Or they'll fit it into only those things that have value to them. but which are broader than that they don't see. You know, it's a natural thing, because you can only function within your sphere of understanding. So then when you have two persons that are working on these two different levels, then they may come into a conflict if there's a different perception on that item. So you have to go to the next level, because the next level can see the two below it. And if there's a conflict on there, then there's above that. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that it's this point was being made to show that the important thing is what's above it, the parampara. So that's what's above it. So as the parampara is showing, that's the anayatattva that comes down to us. And that, then we judge. Right? That we judge. So even if you look at it, that the person themselves, about themselves, is talking about spots on the moon, that the example has been given by the Acharya, Prabhupada. So you can see them giving the example of the spot on the moon as a spot on the moon. You know what I'm saying? It's not good, it is a spot, but it's a spot on the moon. What good the moon is doing? No one talks about the spots. Right? Like that spot on the sheep, yes, but not a spot on the moon. Right? Like that. So the spot on the moon is that the benefit it's giving is so much greater, no one worries about it. So in the same way is that these things aren't worried about as long as it's still shining. Right? You don't worry about the moon when it's new moon, right? Because there's no moon, you don't see nothing. Spots are still there, but it's not producing any light, so no one talks about it. But when it's bright and shining light, then no one talks about the spots. When it's careful, then one doesn't make the same mistakes. All these different things. But the point is that that principle always has to be seen. The ocean of service is so much more beyond anything in the material energy. You know, that's the point. That's why Krishna always has fun, even though he is the establisher of religious principles. The Sankarshan, he comes to establish religious principles. He wants to point out that more important than religious principles is him. The reason religious principles are important is because God's established them. But if we miss God in our following religious principles, then we've missed the point. You know, our connection to God is we know God through sadhana, through religious principles, through pancharatra, through instruction. You know, but personally, that may take time. So all these things are important because they connect us to Krishna. Therefore, also Guru is important because he connects us to Krishna. So if that connection is still there, it still works, then it's still valuable. That connection is not there, or it's been compromised, so it's only partially there, then we need to make that connection. So as you were saying, that's time. Someone is just a moment. They heard about it, they move on in that moment. Others may take them years, you know, to get that same kind of commitment and faith and all that. But that doesn't, there's no time on it. Since it's a transcendental thing, there's no time limit on it. Whenever you work it out, it's worked out. Ideally, you try to work it out as soon as possible. But what soon is, there's no definition like that. So that's the standard point. So those who push it either way, that's a problem. And there's only created problem in the past. So time is there, but one shouldn't just let it ride. If it's too much of a problem, then don't think about it until you can think about it, you know, and look at it, analyze it, you know, nicely, like that. And then find others who are able to, you know, how others are dealing with it, what's there. If those other persons you trust, how are they dealing with it? You have got brothers who are handling, how are they handling it? What is their viewpoint? What are they looking at? You know, how do they deal with the points that you have? You know, have they? Maybe they haven't. You know, someone else has. So in that way, you know, read the book, study. Because that point is always supposed to be there. It's all six years supposed to go back to Prabhupada. Like that. That's where it should be coming from. You know?
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay.
154 basis is to disforgive me if I say something wrong, and I hope some other people can benefit also, because this is topics which I think big disturbance and disturbing many others' mind also, including my own self, you know that very well. So please forgive me if I say something that hurt your feeling for anything, but I really offer my obeisances to you. Thank you very much for such a wonderful purification. And in the future, if I do something, some mistakes which you see, please correct me. And, you know, right on time, so I won't go on with that. But I'm positive Srila Prabhupada is there for all of us. And, you know, by reading his books, following his instructions, and associating with the devotees like yourself, and also others who are sincere, and they really need Prabhupada's mercy and blessing, we'll go on and not only save ourselves, but save others too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything else on this point?
No.
And all these things are saying that my guru left, he's dead, And then Shiva Shandibhuti was saying that you cannot just say that you just let them do so, you cannot just criticize them. The best of Mahatma Sanyasi, and you say that Thomas Sanyasi is indeed. And he was saying that, see, this person who we were actually mentioning, he was there in Mahatma Sanyasi for 25 or 27 years. And he said that in our Sankaraya, these people are born as a devotee, they are born in big, but high-class Brahman family. They are some fire. And many of them were spending for 10 years or 5 years. So you see that what we expect is that what we can say to somebody like, you know, you're coming from a Western background, you didn't come from such a static, religious background, so how you can blame somebody for that? It happens, it's great, it works, it's nice. If it doesn't happen, okay, Prabhupada, if you want to find 100 dinosaurs, if you make it, everybody will glorify it. Then okay, it's impossible anyway, so that was his point.
And that was associated with Ramanuja?
I don't know which.
Oh, you don't know who he was. So then, can you hear? No, he was making the point that devotee went to another Sri Vaishnava about his guru had fallen. And so then he wanted to know what to think about it. And so then he was saying, he said, you know, here, this person was born in an elevated family, you know, and was sannyasa for so long and all this, and then but still had difficulties. So that's just the way it is in the material world. You know, so the point is that he was giving an example of shooting the rhinoceros. You go out to hunt the rhinoceros, so it's impossible. But if you can do it, then everyone will glorify him. If you can't, then what can you know to say? So the point is that Prabhupada makes this point, is that he made the point, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. You know, sometimes the boys get very shocked, so when this one happened and that happened. But I said, that's normal, it's the material world. Says, be surprised who stays, because they've stuck it out with Maya. I mean, against Maya. So then we know that devotional service is not lost, so it'll always go on. Because we're working on the eternal platform, then we have to judge it in relationship like with that. You know, it's just like that, what was that one devotee, Lord Chaitanya rejected him. He said he wouldn't see him until 10 million lifetimes. Then he was dancing, he actually said, oh, if only after 10 million lifetimes I'll see Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya said, okay, call him in. So when you work on the eternal platform, then certain things are just small aberrations in time. And so it has to be seen what is gained, what is resting, you know. And one has to do that very seriously, you know, contemplate it very deeply. And, you know, in the association of devotees, you know, seeing what Prabhupada says. And then in that way, then plan and move forward. You know. But in any case, we follow the instructions, they've worked, and we've progressed, so there's no need to stop that. It's now finding out, is that the ideal? How does it continue? Like that. Sometimes the idea is like, it goes, okay, the guru's fallen, he told me to chant 16 rounds, he's not chanting 16 rounds, why should I chant 16 rounds? The point was, if chanting 16 rounds, we benefited, and it is given by Prabhupada and the acharyas. So it was bona fide instruction. Maybe they're not in a position to continue giving us this instruction, but that instruction is good, and us following, we benefit. If we continue to follow it, it'll still work. But now to inspire us to further, you know, be inspired in our chanting, then we'll take shelter of others who we feel that chanting is strong. Does that make some sense? Is that, yes? No? Very good. The parents take the karma of the children. It depends. There's two ages given. One is 13, one is 16. Prabhupada picks the 16. Because the 16 means that they're trained properly, so the girl is chaste and the boy is celibate. Then it's 16, because then they become adult. 13 is the age they're not adults, but if they know what, you know, boys or girls is,
you know, they mature on that platform, then it will be from that age. But I'm sure there's still some connection. There's always going to be transfers to whoever they're dependent upon. So if they're dependent until 18, it will be until 18. They live in your house and you're taking care of them, dependent on you, there's some transfers. It goes to the teacher, like the kid goes, let's say they're with the parents. Then they go to the gurukul, then it goes to the teacher. And then when they go back home, it goes to the parents. You know? Like that. So whoever is dependent, it always something is going up. But for kids, it's full. Like that. And then after that, it's partial. That's why one has to be very careful of what you allow the kids to do and value to train them, because whatever bad things they're doing, you're getting a reaction. The other is that you're supposed to benefit them so they'll go back to Godhead, so they should gain values that after they're not under the care of the parents, then it will be good for them. It'll be progressive for them. So from both angles, for the benefit of the child and the parent, the parents should be very careful to imbibe in the children good values so that the children will not be entangled later, because they didn't know. It was just like that story told by Prabhupada about the nephew who grew up with his aunt, because, you know, all his parents had died, everything. The aunt is very liberal, let him do anything. And then he became bad, you know, went from bad to worse, became a criminal, became a murderer, and then he was caught and was sentenced to death. And then when she came, you know, the last visit, you know, then he came up and I've heard one story, he bit her ear off, the other ones he slapped her, whatever. In any case, it was not overly pleasant with her. And then she was so upset, why did you do this? I took care of you like that. He says, if you had taught me values, instead of just letting me do whatever I wanted, I wouldn't be in this situation where I'm about to become. Because I didn't have any values, I didn't know. So that's the whole point, is the sentiment has to be balanced with science. That's the point, is you have the science and then it's applied to the art. So the art is where the sentiment comes in. Just like you take music. Music is a science. How you will apply it, that's the art. That's where you express the sentiment. Right? The feeling is expressed through, that means through the science by the art. So that's the point, is there's the science of parenting and then there's the art of parenting. So nowadays, many don't know either. And then some know the art, but they may not know the science. Because unless you know Shastra, you good chance you don't know the science. They know the art, if you do this, the kid's nice, if you do that, the kid's glad. If you do this, they listen to you, do that, they don't. That's the art. But that is based on principles of the science. So one should know both. Then it works very nicely.
How does the boy realizing that he... she will teach the morality and everything good with her, how that the last moment he came to that point, right before he couldn't. Because that's a critical...
Well, he saw it, that whatever he grew up, how he grew up, he just followed that value system of that, do whatever you want to do. Whatever makes you happy, do it. So this guy bothered him, so he killed him and made him happy. So then he figured out that no, there must be training, there must be restriction, there must be direction. So it's that you do whatever you want to do within the context of what's correct. So you have, and the Vedic system is such that you have a broad range of options like that. And so within those, then you choose. And then within each one that you choose, in the detail, they have options. So there's always, that way in the Vedic culture, each person's an individual. So it's like you have so many names, so many this and that. It's like, so much of the time, it's like you hear the Vedic things and the names and that. Very rare you have hear a common name. You know, you hear, you know, like, you heard Brahmira, you know, Arjuna, you know, Arjuna, you hear Kartavirya Arjuna, but not Arjuna. You know, and this and that, so everybody's, it's so different. Because they match the nature, the time, the nakshatras, and this. But, you know, how many Georges have you heard of? You know, Sams, or Williams, or, you know, Charlie. It means there's tons of them. there's only so many names.
Speaking about names, how is that happening that before they were born already they knew which soul if it word, and they give the name which was equal to these qualities? And you know, that's often in the shastra.
Is how did the sages know? Okay, this will be the last one. Is how do the sages know the qualities of the child that will be born? That's because, one, they can see past, present, and future. So that they know. Two is they understand the consciousness of the parents. So therefore they know what consciousness the child will have. Like that. It's all connected. So between those two, they can tell. You know? And also if they know the time, then they can tell from the chart. Because the traditional Vedic system of making the chart for the child is about the time of conception, not the time of birth. Most things that you look at the old shastras are calculated from time of conception. Like it says, this ceremony is done this many years after conception, not after birth. So the point is that the parents have decided to have Garbhan on samskar. They pick a time, right? And that time is a small window. And then they know within the window what the time is. You know, the man may not, the woman. You know, so then within, as long as you're within 15 minutes, then your very good detailed meeting can be there. If you're interested in nadis, then it has to be down to, you know, from half a second to 3 seconds. So that's not difficult. Generally, they use that on birth, nadis. But on the other, you use regular job. So you can just tell that, and then you make the chart of the child from there. You know everything about the child.
Nowadays it
works. It works, just nobody bothers. You know, you ask most people about time consent, they wouldn't have a clue. You know? Like that. Because the karmis don't know, because they don't know which one it was. You know, either who it was or which time it was. And the devotees also don't pay attention. They may know the general time of the month or the general, you know. But the tradition is they know the time. You know, you pick the muhurta. That muhurta will give this kind of personality. So you could even be that scientific. You pick the muhurta according to what kind of personality you want. Because you have these options of these many times. So you look at the charts of those and decide, okay, this one's the one you want.
Or you don't worry about it.
Yeah, you don't worry. But then you don't worry later either. Don't make the chart later to find out how come it's such a bad thing. Will I survive? Will they survive? Okay. You know what I'm saying? These things, main thing if you're devoted to Krishna, don't worry about it. But the point is these options are there. That if we're worried about these things, then this is how you engage it. That's what we're meaning. That's the dovetailing of these propensities. You know, if you want to know all these things, then these are the way it's done.
Because if you don't know exactly, then you go to the astrologer, then they create some, you know.
They give you very general. The more general it is, the more. Because you need to know within 15 minutes, because the lagna within the lagna changes every 15 minutes. Generally, you can get, but 15 minutes is strong. If it's bigger, you know the day, then it'll be good, except the moon won't be strong. Moon moves too fast. So you get more general reading. You know, if you know the month, then you can get more general, you know the year, you get more general in that.
How about the headlines?
That after 12. The palmistry is not solid till after 12. Because all the nerves, everything in the body aren't like in place. Yeah. You can get general indications. You can tell kind of like inclinations of nature of study or occupation. That you can get a general idea of the specifics, you know, it's after 12. Most of these things are like that. Yoga system doesn't work until after 12. So many of these things are later.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samarita Bhaktivin ki, Chaitanya Jagavu to get that.
Bhaktivinoda Puna Maharaj ki.
Make quick decisions and want to get things done. So you have to have persons that you trust that see from a balanced point of view. Whatever they are, it doesn't matter. Vidura was one such person for Dhritarashtra. He's a Shudra. So they don't have to be a Kshatriya. Traditionally it's Brahmins, but it can be anybody who has a cool head and will look at it from a proper perspective. Then, you know, if it's a small thing, you just do it, you habituate. But if it's something serious, big, take advice from others, contemplate it, think about it. Don't take long, move on it quickly, you know, dynamically, but don't be hasty, because the point is the bigger it is, the more time it will take to correct it. So then you better have a bigger plan. Because if you go into a big problem with a small plan and it's the wrong plan, you'll get burned. Does that make sense?